Hey, everybody. Hope you're having just a great day. I know that we are all probably thinking right now about getting refreshed over spring break and then getting ready for the best Easter we've ever had, right? So we're sure praying for that with you guys. I can't believe Easter's just 4 weekends away, and I can't wait for the whole Passion Week experience. I want to ask for your prayers right up top. Tamara and I are going to be traveling next week. We'll be going to Frankfurt, Germany. And there's a group of pastors that are gathering from across Europe who have a strong passion to do something about the most dangerous, difficult places of the world, where the church needs to be established, where the church needs to thrive. Obviously, it's not easy in places like Afghanistan and Iran and places like that, right? But it's exciting to be a part not just of our local church, but to be a part of the church worldwide and to be a part of what God's doing. I am super excited today. We're going to talk about ministry, and we're going to talk to somebody doing a great job of ministry up in the Northwest, Pastor DJ Robbie. DJ, thank you, man, for being with us today.
How you doing? It's great to be here.
I'm doing good. Is it cold up where you are? What's the weather like?
Yeah, it's 40s.
40s. Well, it's going to be that in Frankfurt next week, so I'm going to be in your... In your kind of weather. I think it snowed yesterday there.
Yeah, it's not raining, so we're good.
That's dry. Good. Well, hey, before we get into what we're going to talk about today, which is you and I talked at the conference, and I was really so moved at what you're doing for the homeless. And I'm going to talk about why in just a minute. But talk about your church a little bit. Talk about how it got started and what you guys are up to, because the church itself is a great story.
Yeah, well, we started the church in 07 and started in our downstairs and then moved to the Boys and Girls Club in our area. And really, it just started as a youth outreach, started reaching out to kids, skaters. We have a local skate park in our town. And so we began to just reach out to them. And so from there, we couldn't really meet in the Boys and Girls Club for very much longer. And so we got a huge warehouse, 12,000 square foot warehouse in another neighboring town. And we put an indoor skate park in there. And then we put pool table, ping pong table, foosball tables, computers for kids to do their homework after school. We had a stage with instruments that the kids could play, basketball hoops inside and so forth. So it was just a youth center. And the city, unfortunately, had closed us down due to some permitting. And so we moved around, you know, we're in our fourth location. We've been where we are now for 5 years. So we started the church just out of a youth outreach. And it's, you know, it's grown from there, many different ministry expressions. Right now, our main three ministry expressions are just that Sunday morning local church experience. And then we started a Christian school. So we're very committed to Christian education in 2011. So that's another one of our main expressions. And then, you know, what we're going to talk about now or while we're together is just outreach. That's a major, major expression of our ministry. And we've done that, you know, ever since I was born again. I mean, I was under the bridges and out there in the highways and byways, just leading people to Christ, you know. And so we've never stopped doing that. We've just used different kinds of nets. And so, I'm happy to be here and inspire anyone that I can to get out from amongst the four walls and go meet needs, you know, of those in their community and primarily their neighborhood. And we're called to love our neighbor. And so what does that look like?
Yeah, we're going to talk about it today. And of course, when you and I were talking, I think I got into the session late because both of those things were really interesting to me. You're in a blue state, you know, you have probably a higher percentage of people who are conservative in within the state, in the county you're in, but you're definitely in a blue state. So you're dealing with all that kind of stuff. You're trying to help kids think biblically. You're trying to develop a biblical worldview within the hearts of your people and their children. And so that was really fascinating to me. I was a theological historical studies and American history major in college. And really, you didn't know that. We didn't have time to talk about it. But I wondered if I was going to go that route earlier in life. So that was fascinating. But what we're going to talk about is ministry from the outreach side. And this is kind of what I'd like to start with. When I was, a lot of people, we've been in Europe, right? And you see these beautiful cathedrals. And there's a time that people looked at those beautiful cathedrals and they thought, oh, this is awesome. It's just so beautiful. I come and I hear the word of God. But now you go and basically they're tourist museums, a lot of them, you know. You go in and you pay to see that, and that's how they're keeping them alive. But there's one kind of church that'll never turn into a tourist museum. And that's the one that does what Peter did in Acts 3, whenever there's a lame guy. And Peter said, silver and gold have I none, but such as I have, I give you in the name of Jesus, walk. If we help people whose marriages are in a place where they're not functioning, where their families aren't functioning, where their finances aren't functioning, if we care enough to reach down and heal people, our church will never turn into a museum. People may not, you know, whatever expression we have, whatever wineskin we have, that's all cool. You know, I'm not against any of it. But at the end of the day, that's what we want to do. We want to reach into our communities and we want to really reach people. So we're going to talk about that today. Real quickly, I just want to welcome the new pastors to the network today. We're just going to put your name up on the screen. And if you see your name on the screen, just a big welcome, Pastor Rusty from Park View Baptist Church, Pastor Jorge from Reaching People for Christ Church, Pastor Walter Bright, Pastor Lonnie Brown, Pastor David Buckner, Jason Bird, Cletus Coe. We want to welcome all you guys. Kent Dunwoody, Joe Hassler, Doug Hibbard, Randy Kersey, Steve Knight, Richard Oglesby, Alton Pohl. He's real close to me. Pastor Lane Robinson, Pastor Ron Smith and Jeff Vinke and Ken Watson Sr. We want to welcome all you guys to the network. And we do these webinars to sharpen pastors. We like to call them our lunch appointment with somebody you'd love to go to lunch with. So we do these every 2 weeks. Got a lot of free stuff on the Ministry Warehouse, so hope you'll go check that out too. But we're going to talk specifically about ministry to the homeless. So talk to me about when that first came into your heart. How did that whole thing get started?
Well, ever since I surrendered my life to Christ, I've been out, you know, working with the homeless out on the street. And so as you do that, you learn some things along the way. You learn what not to do, what to do, what works, what doesn't work. And but in 2016, a friend of mine had contacted me, a business owner who I used to promote his business, help promote his business. I had a marketing company prior to pioneering the church. And he reached out to me and he said, you know, I'm in a huge church and I want to make a significant impact in my community in a tangible way. And I just can't seem to do that where I'm at. And he said, so I'm reaching out to you. And he said, you know, I have some resources and I know you have vision. We began to talk about what God was doing in our hearts. And what happened as a result of that, I shared, you know, our work that we were doing in the homeless camps. And so he was interested in that. It took him through the woods, and we began to explore together what the real needs are that the homeless have, because there's a lot of talk out there as to how to help the homeless, but until you actually engage with them on a personal level, you don't know. Everything's just an assumption. And so we went out into the homeless encampments and we began to ask homeless people what their greatest needs were. And everybody that we talked to, it came down to getting clean. And I found out in my community there was a man that would turned a fifth wheel into a shower unit. He had a shower on each side, and he was washing or he was just giving homeless people showers in the middle of an alley. And so I said, man, I got to meet this guy. And so I went and met him, and that's exactly what was happening. You know, he was giving showers to the homeless there in an alley by a nearby church. They were doing a feeding. And so it was just a great spot. They were coming there to get food, and then he was giving them a shower as they were there. And but you know, it was rather late at night when I visited, and you know, about, I don't know, it was summertime, so it was around 9, so it wasn't dark yet. But I began talking to him, and I would see homeless people come out of the showers, right? And clean and very grateful and thankful for being able to have a shower. But the thing that I saw was that they were wearing the same clothes that they walked in with. And so, you know, I asked, Frank was his name. I said, how long are you out here every night? And he said, until the last person needs a shower. And I thought, man, I have never really seen anything like that in my life. Like, this is the most selfless ministry I've ever seen. And I said, do you work? Are you retired? He said, no, I work at the airport. I got to be to work at 5 a.m. And I'm like, wow. I mean, and so, but here's the thing, in going through the homeless camps, what you'll find is you'll see a lot of trash on the ground. You'll see a lot of, you know, you will see a lot of drug paraphernalia. But you'll see a lot of clothes, and they just, once they get wet or once they get dirty, they just got no way, to clean them again. And so when I saw a couple people coming out of that shower, putting those clothes back on, and I just kind of connected the dots with what I saw in the homeless encampments and what I heard from people, homeless people, we just said, you know what, here's the lap we're going to run. We're gonna wash clothes for the homeless, and we just dared to believe God that He would show us how to do it, because there was nobody doing it. We wanted to just find somebody that was doing it in the area, or maybe in a neighboring state, or throughout the United States, but we just could not find anybody that was doing it. And so, you know, just a couple, a business owner and a pastor coming together. With a vision to help those that have no means to help us back. And but we you know, we had no idea about plumbing and electricity and all that. But you know, God directed us and led us, and it was about 6 months from idea to implementation. And so we started we put the truck out on the street in 2016, and it's been out ever since.
That's amazing. I mean, obviously it's hard to stay healthy if your clothes are dirty, right? If you can't do anything about it. So I can imagine the disease that was stopped and the healthier people became because of it. Do you have any idea like what percentage of our country is homeless?
I don't. And it, you know, it fluctuates, and it's geographical. You know, and, but I will tell you, the sad story is that, the percentage grows every year. And it grows exponentially in areas like mine, Oregon, you know, Portland area is horrible. You know, LA, I hate to say it, but
Denver,
you know, it really,
yeah, you know, yeah, you know, it's really interesting. Yeah, I was in Denver watching a baseball game and it was bad. But I, what's interesting is a lot of small county mayors, they're careful about how they minister to the homeless because they feel like their little towns will get overwhelmed. You know, there's a big enough need from their perspective. I've talked to a number of pastors like myself who talk to the mayor in their city. But what a great thing that you can go out. And God bless that guy who gave them showers. It was a portable shower too, huh? That he rigged up in a truck somehow.
Yeah. And he just hooked up to the church that, you know, was right nearby their water. Our truck has the option to carry water on board, or we do have a hose bib. So if in a location there is water, we can just tap into their water. But we wanted to make sure that we were self-sufficient regardless of whether there was water involved or not. But water's heavy, so you don't want to be driving it around too far. So, we saw that, and we're not trying to do everything. We just wanted to run our lap, you know. Yeah. But the honest truth is, if you don't know somebody's name and you don't know their story, then there's no way to know really what their need is. You can just assume it. And that's what's going on in the homeless community. The church, I think, as a whole, has just assumed that they know how to help them. They've assumed some other things, like everybody's on drugs. And I mean, it's bad out there, but not everybody is a drug addict, believe it or not, out there. And, and some are new to the streets, some are vets, they may not ever, move off of the streets. You got to want to get off of the streets. And so our ministry is not just one more resource added to the other many resources that are out there in the community. We're a net. We see this ministry as a net. And we're just using cleanliness as a net to connect these people to Christ. And so we don't just provide a service. We have people inside the truck. We have people outside the truck. Outside the truck, they're actually connecting with people and asking them what their plan is and presenting resources to them to get them off of the street. We're not trying to make them more comfortable as they continue to live on the street. We're trying to challenge them with solutions to get them off of the street. And, that just takes eliminating a lot of excuses that they have. I'm a felon. I can't get a job. Sure you can. I can give you 50 companies that will hire you. And so what's your next excuse? Well, I don't have any ID because my backpack got stolen. Okay, cool. Well, we'll drive you down to social services. We'll get you. Well, I don't have an address, so I can't get an ID. I'm like, okay, great. So I pull in, give them a church business card and say, hey man, now your address is 1820 Bickford Avenue, Snohomish, Washington, 98290. So what's your next excuse? And we just train people to go through and eliminate excuses. And so we've had some miraculous stories, people getting born again, people getting housing and jobs, and just, delivered from drug addiction, just amazing stories. So,
yeah. Isn't that awesome? Well, you went down the track I was going to try to take you down, and that is, I know that you're a pastor. So you care about people's physical needs, but you obviously care about their hearts and you care about their souls. And so cleaning their clothes is really like the first step into a lot of deeper ministry that happens. Just share one of the, would you just share one of the stories with me? Just tell me just one story that I'd love to hear. Because again, it's like a bunch of pastors having lunch. And I think everybody's probably out here saying, tell me a story.
Yeah, gosh, there's so many, but gentleman we had was battling meth bad, and he would always be sitting in the alley and no shoes and just barely any clothes and sores all over him and he would just sit in the alley and we'd see him week after week. We tried to engage. There's very little conversation that he would want to engage in. But finally, we started to reach out to him at his point of need. You didn't really need to ask him if he needed shoes or if he needed sweats or if he needed something, warm to wear. So we just began to reach out and meet that need and not really expect anything in return. But shortly after that, he began to open up and chat. And you know, long story short, he was battling a massive addiction. And one of our leaders began to continue to reach out to him. Didn't happen overnight, but just consistently reach out to him and clothe him. And soon after that, was able to just take him to church and to give him rides, because everything, they just had nothing. And soon after that, he just completely surrendered his life to Jesus, and now is married. Wow. has a home, has a wife.
Awesome.
And here's the thing: this happened probably 5 years ago, but we're still in contact with him. And you know, there's so many stories. I had a guy was sleeping on the park bench, you know, everybody was about to be done, wrap up, leave the alley. And he was just sleeping on the park bench. And I could tell, man, he was about to freeze. If he was going to sleep there overnight, he's going to freeze to death. And, so I woke him up, before we left and said, "Hey, you know, do you need a ride? Do you need a ride somewhere?" He woke up and he was freezing cold. So I went and got some clothes and gave him some clothes. And then he started just bawling and crying because somebody had stole his bike that night. And so he had no place to go. And so we were able to, you know, get him in the truck and drive him home. But here's the thing, you know, when I asked him where's home, it was in the woods. It was literally in the woods, man. I dropped this guy off on the side of the road so he could go into his house, not really a house, in the woods. But you know, again, he would just continue to come, and so he was a mechanic. We found out, you know, what he did. He was a tradesman. There's a lot of tradesmen on the streets. And so we were able to, you know, get him work and continue to engage with him. And there's so many, you know, so many stories about, you know, God's redemption, restoration, and just recovery. But this is real.
Hands on. Real. Yeah. And it's not shallow. I mean, it's not like you're taking taquitos out and you're giving them something to eat for a day. I mean, you guys, it's going deeper. So I want you to take me as a guy who says, I think I might like to do this. All right. And I want you to take me from step one. So you clean their clothes out where they live, right? You take a vehicle out and you actually clean their clothes out there.
We have a 16-foot box truck that we have turned into a mobile laundry unit. So we have two washers, two dryers, and then we have different clothing. We'll have, you know, socks. Obviously, we always have socks, underwear, and stuff like that that we can – those necessities that we can give out to them. But yeah, we partner with either parachurch organizations or churches that are already – have some sort of traffic, whether it be from a feeding or something.
Yeah, we have Christ Kitchen here in town. The Methodist Church does a great job of feeding the poor in our town. So you would partner with somebody like that, and then you basically took a truck and converted. Do you have a website where people could look at any of this?
Yeah, it's about to be overhauled, but yeah, it's washedmobile.com. And then there's a video that tells a story. It gives some statistics of homelessness. And there's some information on there.
Yeah, that'd be good. So then I'm assuming you probably never met anybody who didn't want you to wash their clothes. Most of the time they want you to wash their clothes, right? For the most part.
Well,
or do you get some no's for that?
Yeah, well, I get excuses. Like, so for instance, you know, we started in summer. We figured, you know, summer would be a great time to start the ministry, to launch the ministry. And so people don't wear a lot of clothes in the summer here. You know, it does get hot, believe it or not. It doesn't rain every day. And so people that all they have is the clothes that they're wearing, and you come by and you say, hey, man, would you like to wash your clothes? Well, their first response is, this is all I have. Like, what am I going to do? Just, you know, get buck naked right here in the alley. And so we said, like I said, it's a learning process, right? So that was a good question, right? So I went and ordered some pods. It's like a pop-up, like a tent.
Yeah.
And so I bought these pods to eliminate that excuse. Number one, we started carrying sweats and t-shirts or shorts and flip-flops and whatever on the truck so that we could give them something to wear while we're washing their clothes. But it's not always that they can go in and into a bathroom and get changed. So we went and bought these pods so they could go in and change out of the clothes, and so that we actually could wash their clothes and they could, you know, have something to wear in the meantime. We do get some excuses, but that's rare, because we've learned to eliminate the excuse. But yeah, pretty much everybody else, you know, they definitely want their clothes washed,
You shared kind of a little track you guys run on that is four things: cleanliness, conversation, connection, Christ. So you you start with cleanliness, you go to conversation, try to make a connection with them, and ultimately have stories like the guy who's married and has a house and has a job and things are good. So how hard is it to get people from cleanliness to conversation? If it's rare for somebody to turn you down for cleaning their clothes, how common is it for them to turn you down once you start talking to them?
Yeah, no, I mean, from cleanliness to identifying the need to conversation, it's pretty easy, because I'll tell you what, the first time that truck ever hit the alley and it caught the eyes of homeless people, they thought it was a joke, man. I mean, homeless people would look at this truck because it's a big 16-foot truck. It's got it's wrapped, right? And it's big, bright green, and it says, you know, laundry for the homeless. And they would look at that and just go, is this for real? And we would joke around with some of them and just say, no. We just spent $5,000 to wrap a big box truck that says laundry for the homeless, but that's not really what it is. And of course it's real. And when they realized that we understood what their need was, like, we didn't have to ask them, what's your need? We already know. We've already done the research. We've already done the social experiments. So when we showed up there, these guys were like, they get us. And so that really earns you the opportunity to have that conversation. And so from that, you know, from cleanliness to identifying the need that they need to clean their clothes to conversation, that's easy. The hard part is from conversation to connection, because that's where you find out if they really want help or not. Okay, whether you're really going to reach them or not, how receptive or not they are to the gospel, and that's a little rougher. And so when we're training people, we're saying, hey, look at the parable of the sower. Okay, you have 25% that the word it takes root and bears fruit. Okay. So don't come out here on the street thinking you're going to get 90, 80, 70, 60, or even 50% of the people that are homeless off the street, because you're going to be greatly disappointed. But what if we could get a quarter of them? Uh-huh. And I'll tell you, I'll tell you, that would be a miracle.
Yeah, that'd be a high goal. Yeah.
That'd be a high, but if we shoot for that, I mean, outside of homelessness, we're called to, those are people that are in our town. Okay. We consider them our neighbor. Right. I think you'll like this, because in the short time I had the opportunity to talk with you, I perceive you're kind of a numbers guy, and you know, it's undeniable that we are to love our neighbor. In fact, like in James 2:8, it's called the royal law. And the neighbors are those who dwell near us, right? And it doesn't say those that have houses or those that don't. It's just, there's people dwelling in the woods on my way to my house. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah. The Good Samaritan, when he found the guy, he was just out in the open, right? It's just.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we're called to love our neighbor, those in our neighborhoods. And so can I just share something real quick? In the United States of America, there are, last time I checked, 2021, there's 331 million people. Okay. And if you took a 6% increase each year, I mean, I don't know what we should increase each year. I'm just throwing a number out there. Let's just say in 2023, there'll be 375 million people in our country. I don't know how many committed Christians that represents. I wouldn't imagine it would be even half anymore. But let's take that parable of the sower and 25% out of Matthew 13, let's just even go lower than that, conservatively, 20%. So 20% of 375 million people, 75 million people, maybe we have 75 million committed Christians in the United States of America. If those 75 million people would just reach a handful of people, like their neighbors, five neighbors, just a handful. 75 million times five is that 375 million number. So when we're reaching out to volunteers and they think, man, this is just an insurmountable task of reaching our community with needs, or reaching our community for Christ. If you look in the Bible, people were reached for Christ from household to household. I really believe, when I read the Bible, I don't know, the Great Commission is to be accomplished one neighbor at a time. And regardless how simple it is, man, if we each just, those that are committed, those of us that are committed Christians, if we just reach a handful of people this year.
Yeah. Well, you're kind of into something that's kind of a real passion area for me. I can give you some numbers. We're not going to grow that fast every year, 6%, because Caucasians aren't having babies to replace the birth rate. So that's kind of slowing it down in the United States. But I can tell you that you aren't too far off in terms of people that would consider themselves Great Commission Christians, evangelical believers. You're not that far off. But I think one of the things that God might be doing right now is that most of my lifetime, what's been celebrated the most has been innovation of big churches and big cities. So they're innovative, they're creative, whether it's their programming, their lighting, their campus, it's an innovative place. And people have celebrated that. It's kind of why I led off with those cathedrals in Europe, because there's a time those were filled with people who embraced biblical values and a biblical worldview. World War II changed that pretty quick, in Europe. But in America right now, what I think is going to happen, and this would win the heart of our neighbor is, I think, as opposed to being known for innovation, there are going to be churches known for transformation. And when they see how deeply we care and how committed we are to seeing lives transformed, I think the next generation's heart will open. Yeah, we're still going to have to explain to them that this is what secularism thinks. This is what progressivism thinks. I know they tell you in school sometimes, did a snake really talk and then crawl on its belly? Do you really believe that? I know you guys are going through that, so let's have honest talks about that. But what gets everybody's attention is when somebody who was lame for 40 or 50 years is walking and their life is different. Well, the story you told about that, man, that gets everybody's attention. So I feel like we're at a point right now. I wasn't raised in the evangelical world. I was a traditional church kid who got interested in Bible study and Jesus at 17 years old. And my journey just has taken me where it is today. But I have a lot of hope that if we'll turn our hearts towards the hurting, and if we'll be what our neighbors and the next generation need us to be, that God can do a lot in the next 10 years. If we don't, I actually have a lot of concern because, you know, I think I told it in a conference talking to one of our real high-level military leaders in the country, and just what a lack of character does to the military, what it does to the family, what it does to everything. And if we can't reverse what that's doing in the heart of America, then we're probably in trouble. So it's time for us to walk down our streets and recognize that the war's begun. We're already in it, you know?
Yeah, that's so true. You know, when I'm out on the street, I keep in my mind that the difference that separates me and perhaps the person that is on the street due to whatever circumstance or scenario they're going through is, you know, a lot of them have been caught up in crime because, you know, they're either stealing things just to eat or to clothe themselves or, you know, and there's a lot of in and out of jail. And they use that as an excuse a lot. And so I have to always remind myself, listen, the difference between me and them is perhaps God's mercy, you know, because I have been in jail twice. And the second time, you know, it was different than the first time. And I read a book about the grace and mercy of God. I think it was a jail issued book. And, I thought, man, I wonder if God's mercy could reach me, you know, and, you know, I see grace as something we get that we don't deserve. And mercy is something that we, don't get that we do deserve. And, I didn't, you know, I'm sitting in jail and I didn't really want what I deserve. I didn't really know what I deserve because that's in the hands of the judge, right? I read this book and I say, hey, I wonder, for the first time in my life, I start to wonder, I wasn't raised in the church. I didn't have Christian parents or anything like that. And so I began to wonder, I wonder if God's mercy can reach me. And I go to my arraignment and you understand I'm in jail for a second degree assault with a deadly weapon. So I didn't even know what that carried. But I'm in my arraignment and the judge, you know, it comes time for the judge to say, does anybody else have anything to say before I give my decision? And one of the guys that me and another guy assaulted stands up and says, I do, Your Honor. And I'm like, oh, man, this can't be good. And he let the guy talk. And the guy literally said, Judge, I'm asking you to let him go. And so I got set free. I got let go. I get out of jail on Easter Sunday. I'm not even joking. I get out of jail on Easter Sunday. My girlfriend, now wife, and her mother-in-law come to pick me up with this green Bible I still have. And, that became the first step of me, just seeking anything that had anything to do with the Lord, because, you know, I experienced his mercy. I didn't even know what mercy was. And so when we go out there, in whatever we're doing, I mean, even though maybe there's differences, you know, whether it's demographics, income levels, ideologies, whatever, it doesn't matter. The mercy of God needs to drive, the compassion of God, you know, needs to drive everything that we do. Because if not, we're going to be doing it for ourselves. We're literally going to be doing this to make ourselves feel better rather than, you know, truly having compassion on those in need. And so, you know, I just don't let any of these people give any excuses. And I get real vulnerable and transparent with them, right? And as a result of that, man, when I go out on the street, I don't go out there very often anymore, but when I do, you know, I have instant access to them. And so, you know, sometimes you got to remember where you've come from as you're ministering to those in need, or else you're just not doing it right.
Yeah. You know, yeah. I mean, you're putting thoughts off in my heart that I probably don't need to take the time to say, so I'm going to refrain. That's hard for a preacher, right, not to say something. But I was thinking about William Pitt when he stood in front of Parliament and they were trying to justify slavery, and he reminded them of Europe's cannibalistic roots. And the bottom line is, without Jesus, we'd all be in darkness somewhere, and it'd be bad, and yeah, we'd need a whole lot of help. And so I commend what you do. I have one last question I want to ask you, okay? I'm somebody right now, I'm saying, okay, I'm in. I'm not sure what our felt need will be towards the homeless, whether it's going to be feeding them, whether it's going to be giving them showers, whether it's going to be doing their laundry, but I'm in. I want to meet some felt need so that I can start having a conversation. I can connect with them better and ultimately bring them to Christ and see God do some things in some of their lives that are pretty significant. What kind of team do I put together? Well, how would you build your first team if you were in my shoes?
I would just, you know, as simple as I could put it, I just take somebody, maybe one other person, and go put eyes on the situation, you know, because geographically things are different, but it doesn't take too long to figure out where homeless are at. You know, so whether it's a feeding that's going on in a local church, I mean, they're always needing help. So you can contact whoever is coordinating that and just say, hey, could me and a friend come and serve and just put eyes on the situation. You know, or simply just go walk the areas, that the homeless are. And you know, everybody's comfort level is different. So you, depending on who you're with, you really need to figure out what their comfort level is, you know, to establish what their entry level point of engagement is. You know, I'm not going to take somebody who's freshly delivered off of meth, you know, out on the street with me, quite yet. I mean, we have some of the worst areas. You know, the Northwest is horrible, and so they can easily slip back into that. You know, and I say that because that is something that people naturally want to do when they're set free. They want to go right back out there immediately sometimes and think that they can just go and help others lead them away. And a lot of times they get, you know, they get sucked back in there if they don't have proper discipleship and leadership with them. So it depends on who it is, but I would say start small. Don't try to impact every homeless person in your community. Just start with one. Just start with one, and it always starts with a name and a conversation, because they're very smart. I mean, they know, if you think about it, it's very hard to stay on the street.
Oh yeah. Just safety wise. I mean, just the safety of it. Yeah.
Yeah. You've got to, I mean, your life is one of, like you said, innovation. Like the church is so innovative. Well, man, they're very innovative. To figure out ways to stay on the street, stay alive, get food and clothing and so forth. And a lot of it is done through manipulation. So they know how to read the room, man. They know how to read people. So if you're not real, they're gonna know that. And so you want to start with a conversation so they actually know that you care. Because if not, you know, you can offer them this and offer them that, but they're not gonna engage with you. And they're not gonna trust you.
Yeah, well, they're out there for a reason. I mean, I had a kid in my church who chose to be homeless. I mean, his dad was an engineer, you know, and he went to Houston. He's not alive today. I mean, it's sad that he lost his life, but he literally, intelligent, one of the most intelligent kids to grow up in my church, and intelligent. But he said, "This is how I want to live," and he chose to live on the streets. And let me just ask this, and then we'll go ahead and we'll close, because I like to always quit a little bit early, not a little bit late. But so you talked about, like, I know 50 companies you could work for earlier. You're talking about somebody who had excuses, and you said, "Oh yeah, have a felony. I know 50 companies that'll hire felons." Yeah. So would you encourage somebody like myself, get people who are relationally good with the homeless, because people who are relationally good will have a better chance of getting them to go from conversation to connection to Christ. And then do you work with like social agencies? How do you know there's 50 people? How do you know, do they work with you?
Yeah, we can, but here's the challenge is a lot of the, social services, okay, the government agencies, what you've got to understand is they see the church as one more social service. That's how they see the church, okay? So when they get all their money and their funding and all that, and then they run out, they'll tell somebody, "Hey, look for a local church in your area that has a feeding or clothing or this or that." So we're careful not to take any resources from government agencies or anything like that, because what's happened is
I'm not talking about taking money. I'm talking about being able to, like, if somebody helps people with preparing resumes.
Those kind of
things, coordinating that way, not getting money, just figuring out how to find enough social support to get people to a place of stability. Yeah.
Yeah. We have kind of our go-to.
Yeah. So you've had to work on that, I would think. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. You got to build your network, and your network is built based on the level of commitment that you're willing to have with this connecting to Christ, right? So it's really hard for somebody to hear the gospel message when they're hungry or when they're cold, right? And when they don't have a friend to talk to.
Am I right in assuming, though, that what you're doing is you're building connectors out of your church, like the team that does this out of your church? They're connecting, and then they build friends in the social arena, and they help you in the process. Okay.
For instance, Jim, we used to have three or four warehouses where we would keep furniture and small appliances and toiletries and everything that you would need to furnish a home, because when they were able to get their home or housing through the government, right, it starts, right, or they go through the mission, the program, through a mission, whether it be men's mission or women's mission, and they would go through that, and then finally they got an apartment or something like that, some housing. Well, they would call us, and we would literally just furnish their whole apartment with everything that they need. I mean, coffee makers, microwaves, coffee tables, I mean, everything, silverware, couches, anything and everything. And it became so crazy that it was great. It was great. But but we thought, is there a better way to do this rather than, you know, going, picking up all this clothing, housing it, storing it in, and letting people come. And so we partnered with a secondhand store in our community where they give us vouchers. They'll give us vouchers now, and we can give the homeless them, and they can go pick out whatever they want.
That's awesome.
And then what we do is we'll provide the ride, because they typically don't have a truck, or we have box trucks and all that. So we can help them move it all in. But I mean, all that stuff we're on our seventh year. So yeah, we've built our network to where we can help people, get jobs, get housing, and we've helped people paid for their certification. Their certification has lapsed in whatever, and we'll go help them pay for that. And you can just do the service and then be done, or your commitment can be, you can do the service and you can commit to serve them all the way through the process. And so that's what I get excited
about, trying to build something where we serve them through the process. So I know, like you said, the percentage that do that, thank God you can wash their clothes and you can love them. And only God knows how many say yes to Jesus at some point in their life because you're out there doing that. And that's priceless right there. So, is there anything, let's give the website one more time. Guys can go to one more time if they're interested in learning more about how to do it.
So it's Washed Mobile. So it's ED. So WA.
Okay. So add an ED to what's on the screen. WashedMobile.com. Is there anything you want to say in closing to the pastors before we go?
Well, I would just like to say, if homelessness is your heart, then just get started. Just get started. Start small and see what God could do, because I'm telling you what, God's heart is for the homeless. I really believe that in our culture, the homeless are, in a sense, the current day lepers that everybody just kind of walks by. And so I just want to encourage, all the pastors that may be on, if God's, pricking your heart to get out there and to help this demographic of people, then go put yourself where they are. And ask the Lord what your part would be. And, we're more than available. If you want to come and look at our truck or ask, you want pictures, we've inspired these trucks to be built all over the country. And so we'll do whatever we can to help fast track it, so you don't have to reinvent the wheel, like we did. So
thank God for you innovators. You can help us all get down the road faster. So that's awesome. Well, again, thank you so much for being with us. And hey, I want to let everybody know that next week we're going to have Jason Swan with us. Or not next week, but in 2 weeks we'll have Jason Swan with us. And Jason has done just an incredible job. He took over a church in Garden City, Kansas, and it was one where there were some challenges in the leadership and they were looking for a pastor. He did such a great job of connecting with the heart of the leaders and the people in that church and moving it forward beyond what anybody dreamed it could be right now. That church has amazing momentum. So he's going to talk about that journey, and he's going to help us look into the eyes of our people who are out there and to really pray about, okay, God, how can my leadership cause this to be a body joined together as one, excited about what God wants to do in us and for us and through us. So you're going to enjoy that in 2 weeks. I want to pray for you just as we close. Lord, I just thank you for pastors. And Jesus, you said that whoever receives ministry gifts, God receives you. And Lord, you put that dream in their hearts because, God, you want to bring it to pass. And God, I thank you for so many pastors in the network who care about pastors, care about their families, care about their callings. And Lord, we thank you that through the power of the Holy Spirit and God, through the support of each other, God, we can reach those things that you put in our heart. So God, I pray for every single person who's out there, Lord, that you'll strengthen them. And I thank you for the tenacity they're living with to reach a dream that you put in their heart. In Jesus' name, amen. Great being with you guys. Have an awesome weekend.